He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
You know, we've all heard people sort of talking down on the fact that maybe a lot of what we do is making commercials. But I try to think about that in the bigger picture of the world and other careers. And I'm like, we're still being creative. We're still creating some sort of art. You're still using your skills as an artist to make that commercial. And that should be, I think that should be exciting.
Are you truly happy in your career right now? Are you satisfied? Do you feel imposter syndrome all the time? Are you where you thought you would be when you started in this industry in motion design? Well, those are some of the big questions that I like to ask people all the time. And most of the time it's because I don't know many people who have actually made it to the finish line, made it to the end of a career inside motion design, because what really is motion design anyway? It's constantly changing. And even though we seem like we've had lots and lots of people work through a career, there's not many people can tell you what it looks like on the other end. That's where Aaron Ray comes in. Now, he's not finished, but he's been through quite a bit, from getting into the industry, working at a large studio, seeing that studio close, and considering what to do next. And what I love about Aaron is that you can always see his interest, his artistic tendencies in his work throughout the entire run of his career, but especially now as he's working as a freelance creative director. Buckle up and sit in, and let's listen to an amazing set of experiences from an even more amazing artist. But before that, let's check in with another School of Motion alumni.
Hi, my name is Zach Christie, and I am a School of Motion alumni. I've taken, I think, 3 or 4 different classes through School of Motion, and honestly, it's been really great. I started off kind of living in Ohio and not really knowing what I was doing with my career, and then I kind of stumbled upon School of Motion and actually Joey's 30 Days of After Effects, and really just kind of taught myself from there basically everything I do now. So yeah, I went from basically being like a full-time video guy to a guy that does After Effects and Cinema 4D and illustration and a little bit of everything. I had moved out to Los Angeles, and I basically felt confident applying and working at some of the biggest studios in the country. I don't think that that really would have happened if I hadn't pushed myself through School of Motion. And I'm really grateful for this platform because it really changed my life. And I think it will for you too.
Motioneers, we talked to a lot of different people, and we've talked to a lot of different situations for different career paths inside motion design. But something I've always wondered about, and it's starting to become more in the back of my mind, something that nags at me, is that we are all still kind of part of the first generation of motion design to shape the arc of a career from start to finish. And that finish part is starting to become looming for a lot of us. I don't really know anyone that's actually made it to retirement age in motion design, which is kind of crazy to say because we feel like there's lots of generations of motion designers out there, from the very beginning to before motion design was even a name, to people working right now in Houdini and working in Unreal, that maybe they feel like they're just starting out and they're looking to people who have been around for a while. So curiously enough, I had someone reach out and say, I might have a unique perspective that you haven't actually covered all that much on this podcast. And I thought this would be the perfect time to bring on Aaron Ray to talk about what it's like to be a, is it okay to say this, Aaron, 40 plus motion designer working in the industry?
Yep, no problem with that at all.
Awesome. So Aaron, I'd love to kind of just like set the stage, because I think there's probably a lot of people listening to this that are either just starting, like, what is my career going to look like over the entire arc the whole time? And there's probably other people that are at the same position as you or Aaron, or maybe even a little bit further, like, where does this go? Am I on the box all the time, or am I supposed to give all that up and become a, in quotes, director? You've had an extremely amazing journey so far. And if anybody goes to aaronjray.com, you can see his work. It's extremely qualified for this conversation, I guess is the best way to say it. But Aaron, like, can you give us just a little bit of like the elevator pitch on like how you found motion design, and take us up to where you're at today, just to set the context for the conversation?
Yeah. And thanks for having me on. It's always inspirational to hear all the guests that you guys have, and I'm excited to be here. Really, where it all started for me creatively was, you know, going back growing up, it was and maybe cliche to say these days, but it was skateboarding and sort of punk music and comic books that really kind of got me into this. And skateboarding in particular was sort of my first introduction into sort of real visual creativity as a career. Mm-hmm. And then music, I think, kind of showed me like what it meant to be DIY and sort of anything you put your mind to, if you put in the effort, you can do it. Those things kind of sparked the interest in creativity as a career. And so that eventually led me to college. And I think, did you go to the Art Institute or was that the Chicago Institute of Art?
I went to the Illinois Institute of Art, which was not the good art institute inside Chicago. I went to the factory school.
Yeah,
so I don't know if that was your experience, but okay, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So we're brothers in arms in a much different way.
Right. And you know, I got what I needed out of school, but yeah, I went to the same school, just the Denver version of it. And I went to school for 3D animation, and this was late 90s, early 2000s is kind of when I was in school. And at that time, there really wasn't motion design. It was more focused on visual effects and sort of 3D character animation for film. And that was kind of a new industry. So they were really pushing that, and they were getting away from cel animation, which I think, you know, I probably wanted to be like a cel animator in retrospect, kind of growing up and Disney and Akira and all that stuff. But they only had 3D animation, so that's kind of what I went into. You know, I just wasn't that inspired when I was at school there. And I don't think it was necessarily because of the school. I think it was because some of my other interests still kind of went back maybe to skateboarding and music and stuff like that. So I still had this idea of sort of graphics and graphic design and illustration that I wasn't really getting, you know, in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like we had very similar backgrounds in the sense that I went to school specifically for cel animation. And although we had a program, we literally were seeing no one graduate and get jobs doing that. The only people that were getting jobs were 3D people, and all the cel animation people were coming back trying to teach at the school. And I think halfway through my time there, I was like, oh boy, me and maybe two other people were like, I think we need to figure out what 3D is, like what's going on. Because it just, the writing was on the wall that it's just, whether it was locally or even on like a global scale, that wasn't there. And I think I'll be interested to see how this goes with you, because I feel like a long part of my career was reacting to the situation the industry was telling me versus taking charge of what my obsessions were, my interests were, my loves were, and forging my own path. So I want to see how that tracks for you, because I think we at least had very similar beginnings.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually a really good point, because, you know, I graduated and I learned 3D, I think probably, and we did have some cel classes, so I got the fundamentals of that. We were working on paper still at that time. I don't even think there were Cintiqs or anything at the school at that time.
Yeah.
But I got the fundamentals. But, you know, I learned After Effects in college, which ended up being my biggest tool, I guess, when I was doing animation at points in my career. But I graduated and I was in bands and still kind of in music. And at the time there was still physical music media, so records and CDs and stuff. So I wanted to do album packaging design for bands. And so I got a job out of school at a record label here in Denver. And that was really great because I learned something that I didn't know. I learned print production, the difference between screen resolution and print resolution, and how to lay things out. And I learned how to use, you know, layout tools in design and all that stuff. And that was really fun. And I got to do all the kind of band merch. I got to do album packaging artwork, which is very conceptual. And actually, in some ways, that seemed like sort of like title design to me, you know, mm-hmm. like show or movie title design, but just in a band CD format. And so that was a lot of fun, but that only lasted a handful of years. But that led to another position at a place where I was doing snowboard graphics and skateboard graphics and ad campaigns for these brands that were under this umbrella. And that was also like, I don't know, all of these points in my career have taught me different things that I've learned and kind of taken on. But from like a technical point of view, you know, I learned the print production at the record label, and then I learned how to traffic ad campaigns into various magazines. And I went to China to proof check snowboard graphics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was fun. And I got to do so many different things. So there at that job is around the time when I started noticing motion design again. And mm-hmm. very specifically, I remember Shiloh an old studio. Mm-hmm. You probably remember them.
I've got the book and the DVD sitting there.
Yes. I had that. I was just thinking about it earlier and I don't know what happened to it. I'm bummed that I don't have it. But I remember seeing their work and being like, wow, this is really cool. It's 3D animation, but typography incorporated and music and editing was really cool. So while at that job, we started doing more kind of video and motion content. So I got to sort of open up After Effects again and start using that skill set there. And then I guess that's kind of what led me back into what we would call motion design.
So then where does legwork come into all of this? Because that's where I knew of you. Like that studio, I knew of the studio before I knew of you. And then eventually realized that you were behind a lot of the work there that I love. But how did you go from all of this stuff, this very DIY indie, learning what it is that you dig doing, finding places to kind of like infuse that? And then like, how does a studio come into play?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it really is that DIY kind of thing. And so I had met one of my partners at the record label years before, and he was like a web designer. And then one of our other partners was just, you know, another friend of ours. And he was kind of more of a business side. He actually did a lot of the business management for the record label. And so the three of us just started talking and, you know, we should do a company, and it made sense to do a design company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were coming from interactive design and sort of animation and print design. So kind of all of it. So it was sort of everything in the beginning. And I was sort of, I guess, new a little bit to the sort of advertising agency world and production world. You know, I hadn't thought too much or looked too much into what that really meant. So going into legwork, I was just like, all right, well, we're starting a design company. And that's kind of how that started. And it was kind of a long process before we actually got back into, or before I got more into doing kind of animation and heading up that side of the company. Because initially, like I said, I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. I was like, I want to do band stuff, but that's not really paying the bills. We can technically do motion stuff, but how do we get that work? So that was all a learning process too, like going out and doing screenings and networking and all that to sort of get the work and let people know that we did this stuff. Mm-hmm. The interactive stuff came a little easier. I think at that time, you know, websites and that kind of thing were really fresh, and especially for the advertising world, they were looking to build websites, microsites, whatever for brands. So that actually came pretty quickly. And I think that definitely sustained the company for a while. Actually, funny, I was remembering that Joel Pilger, his old production company, Impossible, was one of Legwork's first clients.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. We did their website and then we kind of worked with them on some rebrand kind of stuff. And then Spilt, which I know you know is another studio mm-hmm. here in town. They were like our second client. So it was pretty funny.
That's amazing. So you go from kind of discovering that animation is something you love, or design focused stuff is something that you're into, and you have all these places that become outlets for it. You make more work doing that. You start a studio, and then you transition to doing, it seems like, and Legwork did a lot of like interactive and web design. At least that's what I kind of found them as, right? But that feels very, I wouldn't say dislocated, but different from where you started off as, like where you this just interest in design. I feel like you mentioned Akira, you mentioned animation, a lot of things similar to me. Right. And I had the same similar arc where it was like, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought I'd be making slot machines for a living.
Right.
I really want to do character animation, love 2D, can find a way to make 3D work if it's based around like performance and narrative. And then the industry kind of grabs a hold of you, and somehow through the waves, the currents that it has, whether it's because of geographics or connections or whatever, you kind of get propelled into a direction, right? Which you may find happiness, you may find excitement, but at some point, I don't know if this felt this way with you or if it's because of, you know, legwork eventually going the same way that so many studios I love go the way. Like I think of Three Legged Legs, I think of Superfat, I think of Legwork, you know, like studios I love creating work that I couldn't wait to see the next thing that comes out. And then, you know, one day the doors close, which I'd love to hear more about that too. But, you know, when that happens, right? When legwork is no more, where do you find yourself? Do you find yourself thinking, oh, I've made a career doing these kinds of things that are serviceable? There's a place for them. There's clients who want them. But do you also find yourself with something nagging in the back of your head? Because I look at your portfolio now, you know, if we go to aaronjray.com and look at it, there's very little of what I thought of when I thought of like the type of clients and work that were the standout work from legwork. So what happens there then? So legwork's, you know, it closes its doors. Where are you faced in your career? What are you in existential crisis mode? Are you stoked? Are you looking for another place to just like, do you think about opening a studio? Do you look for a home just to like have a place to just do work? Like how does that all happen then?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things, but even kind of just taking a step back, you know, legwork was a long period. It was 10 years pretty much that we were open. And like I said, I was kind of finding my way within the company, having the skills to do animation, but our bread and butter was kind of interactive design. But eventually that kind of shifted a little bit. So some of the companies we were doing websites for, we'd also start doing animated pieces for, you know, videos, whatever. So it kind of started growing that way. And before that, I think I was doing a lot of the brand stuff of the company itself. So I was kind of managing the look and feel of the company. I was doing our reels and all that kind of stuff, which was fun. That was, you know, satisfying. But yeah, there came a point where I was like, I need to do more and I need to start kind of being more vocal about the kind of work I wanted to do. And, you know, so it was animation. And so I started taking more of a role and kind of pushing that forward. And, you know, by the time we closed, it was like half and half. You know, we were doing interactive stuff, but we were also doing straight up commercials and titles and whatever pieces like that. So yeah, like at that point, I knew what I liked to do. So as of where I'm, you know, where I'm at now is design, illustration, and direction. The direction thing kind of came, like I'd thought about it, but it kind of happened after I had written an article for Motionographer about closing legwork.
Yeah.
And I had people reach out to me and talk to me about that. So I had a direction rep approach me after that. But I'm pretty clear about where I fit right now. It's just interesting going from, because I am older than a lot of these artists I'm working next to. Like if a studio is hiring me as a designer, the team around me is probably in their 20s, 30s for the most part, which is interesting. But I'm a big fan of the industry and I love seeing like the work that's coming out of it. So I really don't have any weird feelings about my age and kind of what I'm doing right now. I'm doing work that I enjoy doing and I'm working with people that I enjoy working with. And that's from the studio side. You know, I kind of work in two different ways these days.
I mean, I have to say this, that if you want more insight, and it's the reason why I didn't want to go deep into it, because I think that Motionographer article that you put out, and if I remember correctly, there even was like an update to the site possibly.
Yeah, we did a microsite to go along with it.
I thought that was one of the classiest ways to end a chapter of a career or close the doors on a studio that I've ever seen. And I think it, for me, I've been through a couple shops closing and it's pretty traumatic, regardless if you're just a freelancer or if you're high up or you started it yourself. I thought it was just a great example of like, this is the natural lifespan of studios, right? Like in the motion design world, it's almost impossible to imagine a studio starting with two people with no idea how to run a business, just being art focused or however they start. And they always start with the best of intentions and then they grow and you learn. Like it's almost impossible for them to stay around forever. And I look at the shops that are, and you know, there's a lot of stories behind how they're even open now and they're all unique and different. But that idea that, you know, a place can close and it's not the end of a career, it's not the end of, you know, the spirit that lived there. I just really, really appreciated that. I thought it was really,
Thanks, like I said,
it was classy. It was one of the first signs of maturity I thought that I'd seen in an industry that feels like it's perpetually 13 years old, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. It's funny because I did hear some rumors out there that some people may have thought it was kind of weird optically to like put out a reel when you're closing and do a microsite. And, you know, I've thought about that. I'm like, well, to me, we did it. This was a good chunk of our lives so far.
Yeah.
And we loved the company and we did it because we love what we do. So it's like, just because we're closing doesn't mean we don't want to sit here for another 2 weeks and like do a reel and hang out together. Like it was fun to do. And I think back to that, I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, it's because we care about what we do and it's not just a job to us and we want to do one more project together. So,
I just think about it. I love that because I think of all the studios that I can't go back and look at. And I've probably mentioned Three-Legged Legs more times than people care to hear on this podcast, but I love the fact that somehow, you know, when they close the doors, whatever state their site was in, you can still go back and look at it and you can still get a strong sense of the energy and the spirit that existed there. And I look at it still as an example of, you know, like at least from optically from the outside, like if I ever started my own shop, what I would want a place to feel like. And I'm glad that you mentioned earlier that, you know, like you kind of came from this like music-based DIY skateboarding world, because like when a band ends, that doesn't mean that like it's gone from history, right? It doesn't mean that it's disappeared, right? Or it's forgotten, right? The people in the band go on and some people go do other things, but there's still like an honor of the work that was done together as a group. Sometimes they come back, sometimes there's a greatest hits album, but even with skateboarding, there's still this sense of honor of like, man, like there's skateboarders who can't skate anymore, but that doesn't mean that like you don't remember them. You don't like go back and look at what they've done. But I feel like in motion design, there is almost like a, maybe because it's client work, maybe because it's advertising, maybe it's because so much of what we do is like ephemeral and like disappears the second we hit publish or send it off to the client. But I feel like that there is that like lack of maturity of like, no, like what you make actually has some meaning, whether it's just like the energy you generate in the room with the people making it, or like the people that saw it, like what they reacted and how they like, it was either inspiring to them or it gave them a new idea. Like there's value in what we do that I think sometimes we don't even allow ourselves to like admit and express. And that was the first time I saw something like that. And I was like, wow, there's something more, right? There could be a history book to motion design, but we just let it all go as soon as it's done.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with that too. I think, you know, we've all heard people sort of talking down on the fact that maybe a lot of what we do is making commercials. Mm-hmm. But I try to think about that in the bigger picture of the world and other careers. And I'm like, we're still being creative. We're still creating some sort of art. I mean, hopefully there's obviously some bad commercials out there that have no redeeming value, but you're still using your skills as an artist to make that commercial. And that should be, I think that should be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it goes back to, I talk about this a lot too, but I think you and I are both from the generation where, you know, like before motion design as a name, we called everything MoGraph. And before that, before there was even a name, it was just like, I don't know. I go back to the idea that I think there's still a growing identity crisis with motion design. And even as recently as like, even like last week, I think Chad Ashley from Grayscale Gorilla said like, you know, is the name motion design outdated, or is it something that's not, it's never been accurate. And there was a great just like outpouring of opinions and conversations. But to me, like motion design, if you were there at the beginning, like motion design wasn't visual effects and it wasn't animation. And it certainly wasn't After Effects plus C4D equals motion design. It was the Wild West, and it was the Wild West in approaches and references and touch points and types of artists that even worked in it. But to me, like the thing that was most exciting, and I think you can still look at legworkstudio.com and get a sense of this, is that there's a unique way in motion design to solve people's problems, because we have to use tools quickly. We don't have established pipelines. We're randomly picking collections of people to kind of bolt onto the people we work with day to day, that there's a different spirit of like innovation and a different spirit of storytelling that does not follow the track or the history or the lineage of any of the other kind of like creative arts industries. And for me, motion design is actually, I feel like our industry is finally actually growing up to that name, motion design. Like to me, motion design is an umbrella term that actually sits over TV animation or VFX or feature film animation or stop motion. Like it encompasses all of those things. Cause I don't know how you felt, but I was so excited at the beginning of the days that it was like, you could pick up a pencil, a camera, you could use a photocopier. It's like whatever you could use to get into the computer to put something out. Everything was vital. Everything was viable. There was no rule set of like what was right or what was wrong.
Right. I lean more towards the term motion design. I'm not sure that I ever really called it motion graphics, but motion design makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it as an umbrella to all these other sort of disciplines within it, but I think that makes sense too. I think for me, I think of since our day, you know, the early 2000s, mid 2000s, when motion design was first coming up, it was, you know, there was usually typography involved and a graphic sense to it. But that's changed so much now. And you look at things that are just straight up animation, whether they're, you know, it's character based animation or whatever. I kind of feel like if there's not typography or any graphic element to it, I might just call it animation. You know, I just call it animation. But motion design makes sense from a lot of different perspectives as an umbrella. I like that.
I think as the the clients expand and the I don't even like calling them screens, but like the canvas expands for what's possible. You know, we start talking about like experiential design and designing for spaces and designing for glasses and for overlays and, you know, multiple versions of the same world where you're still using your sense of color, your sense of contrast, typography, composition, all of those things that, you know, like you don't necessarily learn when you're an animator in 2D animation, right? Like you're not using the full spectrum of graphic design fundamentals applied to motion.
Right.
That umbrella term is going to be even more needed or even bigger, right? Like motion design to me grows with the needs of, you know, the clients and of the stories that have to be told. Whereas like when you say animation, you know, like you can go to a studio in LA and they will give you a rate sheet for all of the roles that for the last 100 years have been very tightly defined as like, are you a timing chart person? Are you a 2D animator? Are you doing storyboards? And it's like each one of those roles is a specific person who just does that their entire career.
Yeah.
Whereas here, like I'm looking at your site now and it's like, I find it really interesting, Aaron, that like on your site, you've got director design animation on one, another job, creative director, another job, just animation. You don't have a demo reel on your website. But at the same time, as I scroll through all of this and it washes over me, all of this feels like it comes from a person. It doesn't feel like it comes from a studio. I feel like the only place that that's possible is in an industry like motion design.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like the point about the experience stuff being design, that's an interesting point because you're totally right. It's design traditionally was graphic design, layout kind of stuff. But now we're laying motion out on these different panels and different rooms and walls and shapes. So that's kind of a cool way to think about that.
And honestly, soon, like in 3D space, right? You know, like
yeah.
Apple and Facebook in 12 months are going to have something you strap to your face and put an overlay in the world. And you definitely are going to want to have type and you definitely want to have like graphic design skills to work within that space.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so open. There's so many different ways you can go with it. And who knows what my future will be. I know like right now I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing. I like working on canvases that kind of stay the same. I think maybe that's because that's where I came from.
Right.
The options are endless right now, I believe.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at like your Nike piece where you're actually integrating, you know, on your site, you have, you know, really cool hand-drawn things, type integrated to live action. Like there's a world where your directing skills and your vision, 2D animation on top of the actual product, like that evolves directly with the kind of stuff we're talking about as well. I want to go back to, you said there's a couple different ways you work now compared to maybe previously. And I'm wondering if that means sometimes in your career, you're on the box design and animating and other times you're creative directing. Is that the way you're splitting your brain or splitting your kind of roles right now as a freelancer?
Yeah, kind of. So I do direction work through my rep. So that's similar to what I was doing at Legwork. There's really not a huge difference. Mm-hmm. You're basically pitching a concept, doing a treatment, coming up with probably style frames or whatever. And if you win the project, you're the director. And then from there, you build out a team, whatever the best team is. I guess that's a difference. At Legwork, we mostly did everything in-house and we didn't really work with freelancers too much until the end. But now it's like directing, you know, you bring on the team. And, you know, at that point, I usually do the storyboards and the design, and then we bring on animators and I'll usually kind of just give notes and kind of work with them and create assets that they might need. Sometimes I'll animate, but not often. I feel like I'm a much better illustrator and designer than I am an animator. So I like to kind of leave that up to the people who are really good at it. Mm-hmm. And then the other way of working is, you know, studios hire me directly for style frames or whatever. So I'm just helping out with design on projects.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about the whole idea of being like a rep director, because I think years ago, that was almost like a blind spot for a lot of people working in the industry, or it was almost like a secret. And I think now as more and more people are working through, you know, coming up, interning, apprenticing, starting to work at a shop, seeing how it works, getting to the point to pitch, and then they maybe start to get a little bit of the friction of like, oh man, I might want to do this a different way, or I want to pitch to different types of clients, or you know what, I really like working a certain style, but my studio can't support that style. People are starting to find out about this as kind of like a career. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened for you? Like how did you get repped? Who are you repped by? What is that experience kind of like? Because I don't think a lot of people have worked alongside or seen that example all that often.
Yeah. And you're kind of hearing about it a lot more recently, it seems like. And even, you know, younger artists are being repped as directors. But like I said, I wrote that article for Motionographer and had a handful of inquiries, and studios even reached out for like potential full-time positions and things like that. But I really wanted to try out sort of just being solo and freelance. So the rep company is called Flesh and Bones, and they are based in LA and Charleston, South Carolina. So two partners live in either city. But they read the article and reached out to me. And, you know, I'd thought about it, but I wasn't 100% sure if that's where I wanted to go. But being that they're kind of a new company, the risk seemed pretty low, and they were, you know, we had a good conversations. I think we saw kind of eye to eye. Mm-hmm. So essentially, I mean, yeah, that's kind of how it happened. You know, I signed a contract with them, and then it's been since end of 2019 now.
Oh, nice. So how does that work? Just as an example for people listening that might find that interesting, do they essentially get a certain amount of kind of like opportunities coming into them? And then I'm assuming they, you know, like they rep several different people, I'm assuming with different styles or different kind of like, you know, angles on content or angles on like, you know, pitching. Do they kind of cast the right like RFP to the right director? And then you're like, oh, cool. I'm going to go ahead and try to put a pitch together for this. So do you receive essentially like opportunities from them? How does that work?
Yeah. You know, we're on Slack pretty much every day, even when we're not doing projects together, we're chatting and stuff. I've actually grown kind of a good relationship with the guys. And so we talk all the time. But yeah, essentially they get boards or concepts from agencies, brands, some brands as well. And then they will pass that off to whoever's on the roster that kind of makes sense to do that project. A lot of it goes to style, I think, especially if it's an animated project, because they do live action as well. But if it's animated, I think a lot of it comes down to style. So if it's a style that they think I'd be good at, they might pass me that. Mm-hmm. And then I can choose to pitch on it or not. For the most part, I've pitched on everything that they've brought me, you know, usually about a week or so, sometimes less, you know, but usually a week to put a treatment together. Yeah. And then we go from there. And then the EP over there will kind of work with me to budget. I'll kind of estimate what I think it'll take, how long it'll take, how many people I want on the project. And we'll kind of put a budget together. And yeah.
And then you start to assemble the team. And then, so they act also as the production company then. So essentially you pitch, if it wins, it goes towards you. You handpick your team, everything gets budgeted out, and then it gets executed through them essentially with the kind of like team that's rolled up for that project specifically.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The team that I've worked with, or teams, the artists have all been freelance. So they don't actually have like an in-house team like somebody like Not to Scale might have or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I do remember, I just started looking for it and found it. I think there was like a Bank Midwest or something project. And I think that might've been the first time I heard of Flesh and Bones, because you posted something with this really cool, really cool style. And it was specifically a shot of like a 3D living room.
Yeah.
And then there was a 2D tiger on top of it. And I just started looking back to go and find it. It was like one of the first ones on their site that stood out. But that was the first time I remember. I don't even know when that was from. Maybe like a year or two ago.
Yeah, 2020, I think.
Oh, dude. And that was like the first time I was like, wow, this is super cool. And then you start to see more of your work coming through where it again, I start feeling like, oh yeah, there's Aaron. I can see Aaron in his work now again. With that got me really excited that I was super thrilled when you were like, oh, we should talk about this whole kind of like, I don't even know if it's like renaissance, but it's like a like later stage in your career, having this opportunity to start showing more of yourself in the work. I feel like that might be a common thing that people are listening to this might be struggling with, is that, you know, you invest a lot in yourself. You invest a lot in training and like the struggle to get the, you know, whatever skill it is you want to the point where you can actually make what's in your head real. But then the second half of that is like finding places where you can actually do that work. I guess all this ends up in like, do you feel as somebody, you know, you've worked for a long time, you worked at a major studio, that studio kind of, you know, went its own way, kind of like you found yourself in this new stage. You've been doing this for a couple of years. Like, do you feel like you have the same level of like happiness and satisfaction that you had 15 years ago? Or is it a different kind of happiness and satisfaction? Or like, where are you at, like, in terms of your like art making journey, I guess, not just like career and how much money you make, but just like the art that you're making now, do you feel engaged with it the same way you did previously?
Yeah, I actually think since closing legwork, most of the work I've done has been really satisfying and I'm kind of happy. And like you said, like going, you said my work is kind of showing more or maybe my personality through the work. And I think that's totally true, especially with direction, because you're pitching your visual and story concept to something that a ad agency might have really rough boards to. You're coming and giving your point of view. So that's definitely been nice. You know, at Legwork, we got to do that as well, but you're also working with partners and there's more voices in the room. So you're collaborating. And so it might not fully be my point of view. It's more of a collaborative effort.
Right.
So, which is kind of nice about the direction stuff now is, you know, I get to throw my ideas out there and it's cool when they win. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going in the right direction.
I was reminded of this recently because I think my buddies over at Coat of Arms posted something. And I was like, oh man, that looks really cool. I feel like I know who did that. And then I think within a day, you posted the boards for the actual animation. And I was like, oh, that's right. That was Aaron's work. But the thing that blew me away was that when I saw the actual boards that you created, the animation looked like it looked like you had created literally like finished style frames and then someone reverse engineered how to literally animate. It almost feels like a one-to-one, but it was amazing to me because it's not just a one-to-one, but it's a one-to-one of like a really purely distilled specific person's kind of style and interest. Like immediately it's like, oh yes, of course that's Aaron's work. That makes so much sense. But I was amazed that they were able to capture as much of what was in your boards in the actual like animation itself. Can you talk about that piece a little bit or like how that kind of came together or what the experience was like making that?
Yeah. And so that's sort of an example of a studio hiring me kind of as a designer. In this case, it was kind of art direction. There were a couple other designers up front. So there's, I think, three of us working on boards at first. I started with the kind of opening shot. And I think what they did was they took the boards from the different artists and then kind of presented them to client, and then client kind of chose a direction and we kind of went from there. But Coat of Arms, they're great. I've actually worked with them a handful of times since closing legwork, and they have so much trust in their artists. That is actually a place where I do feel like I get to let my personality show through in the work, and they're always cool with it. But so created those initial opening frames and then just sort of built the remaining frames of the spot off of there. And then animators, while I was still designing some of the frames, kind of started exploring how to bring some of that look out in animation. Like in particular, the little plane that's in the spot. I saw that going back and forth as they're kind of developing how to get the right texture and grain and grit and all that on it.
They are so unique, I think, in the world of motion design, because I've been lucky enough to spend some time with Jonathan just talking about the industry. And both Jonathan and Claire, I think, were in the Level Up course we put together. They were amazing to just come in and talk about, like, setting up a studio. But I don't know if there's any other studio that really just feels like almost like patrons of the industry. Like, I almost feel like they set up Coat of Arms to basically just like get work to hire some of their favorite artists and see what came out of putting them together. I know they're obviously like, they have a financial interest in keeping the place open and running, but every time there's just such a certain amount of joy whenever you talk to Jonathan about like, oh, like we were able to put this person together with this person, or this person, we were able to get them with a client that maybe they've never been toward, and look what they made. Like, look at there's just this pride in like being able to create these opportunities that it's awesome to hear that like you felt that way, that like your work when you work with them really comes out as more of like your vision. Cause it, from the outside looking in, it feels that way too.
Yeah, you're totally right. The way that they work seems that way. They're just so laid back and fun to work with. And it does seem like they just are big fans of the people that they hire. And I think that style of studio is maybe kind of something that makes sense for the future of studios, honestly.
Yeah.
And if I was going to start another studio, I might look at something like that.
So you made the perfect segue, because I did want to ask you, with all this experience, you know, this whole journey, you've seen a lot of different sides of the industry. You've seen, you know, starting off small, making a studio, the lifespan of a studio. You're now creative directing, still working for other people, but also seeing more of your vision come out. If you were a kid, somebody in their 20s, getting ready to come out of school, right? Today, in 2022, the world as it is, with clients as they are, with the way we work now, which is so radically different from what it was even like 2 or 3 years ago. But You had all of your experience. What do you think you would do now? I think there's probably a lot of people that are in that situation right now, but don't have the benefit of your experience. What would you do? Where would you go? Like, where would you target like all of this creative energy and capability?
Yeah. Well, one thing, just thinking about kids coming out of school now, or like the younger generation, they're coming out of school way more talented than I or any of my peers were at the time. Like, they're just coming out of school with like such high-end work. And I think, you know, I chalk that up probably to access to the internet, and they're able to compare their work to what's the professional work. And we didn't really have that so much.
Right.
So if I was coming out of school right now, I would assume that I'd probably be a lot better than I was when I did. And if I added my experience to that, I don't know. I mean, I think honestly, I might kind of shoot to do what I'm doing right now, which is kind of direction. Because like, really, direction just comes from being able to understand like how to approach a brief, you know, and pitch and work with a client and that kind of thing. So that's that experience. And then being able to sort of multitask and manage a team throughout a project. And like I said, there's younger and younger people I'm seeing that are being hired as, or repped as directors, whatever. So I might do that, and I might, you know, I don't know if I would start a studio right off the bat, because I think right now with the pandemic, who knows kind of what the future of a studio is. So I'd probably wait that out a little longer and get some experience under my belt. I think one thing I would do differently would, I'd probably move to one of the hubs just to sort of experience that. So New York or LA, whatever.
Yeah. There's so much to unpack with what you said, because I think I still suggest to people who have like a high ambition to work on like high profile projects or to level up their skills quickly, especially as we hopefully start coming out of a COVID based world where people can actually work in studios sometimes. There is a way to kind of like turbocharge your career by getting access to the right projects, the right collaborators.
Yeah.
That said, at the same time, you know, like, I feel like a lot of the other creative arts industries no longer have like gatekeepers that say, nope, you need to spend 8 years working here, and then you need to have X amount of, you know, client jobs where you're kind of art directing and then get access. Like, it, Motiondyne still feels like there is a certain amount of like, no, you have to put 10 years in before you can ever, in quotes, creative direct. Whereas other industries, like you look at the music industry, and it literally is just, I hate using the term merit-based, but it's like, if you can produce somebody and your work sounds dope and it sounds different from someone else and it sounds palatable to a current audience, it doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, what age you are, where you made it, like the possibilities are endless, right? Filmmaking is the same way, right? Like, there's a reason why we have like young guns and 30 under 30 for design and for filmmaking. But in motion design, there still is a little bit of this sense of like, nope, you don't really know what you're doing yet because you haven't sat down with a client. But then there's so many people like, cool, then put me down with a client. Like, nope, you haven't earned it yet. But I think that's gonna start changing, because I think the world, the clients are willing to go with, at least in a pitch, they're willing to say, okay, historically, you know, popular big name studio X and Y, we want you to pitch, but also individual person I found on Instagram, how about you pitch too?
Yeah.
And they'll go head to head. We're seeing it happen all the time now. And people are picking not on the merits of the history or the render farm or the clout of the name. They're like, no, like, this is really cool creative, and it's speaking to a younger audience in a way only a younger person could. We'll figure out how to get you the team you need and give you the experience. It's starting to happen. I feel like that's actually something that, like, at School of Motion and other places, like, we could probably even do a better job of creating environments where you emulate the kind of client experience, and give you real world examples of like what it's like to lead a team and what it's like to pitch and what it's like to, you know, that sliding scale of like humility and ego that you have to have as a creative director, like trying to teach how to like navigate those waters a little bit. But it's exciting to hear that.
Does School of Motion do any sort of like client-based courses?
We do. We do have one course. It's I think some people skip it or they kind of don't notice it, called Explainer Camp. But just because in the name, you know, Explainer has, since we've made it, has become kind of a lightning rod for, you know, people thinking like that's lower, like kind of like quality work. But Explainer Camp does a really good job of taking you through RFPs and kind of like mock client interactions. But I think there's something we could do even further, you know, where it's a little bit more interactive, or potentially, you know, like, we have teaching assistants that help you figure out how to use Photoshop and figure out After Effects. It'd be really interesting to be able to assemble a team of TAs that can actually be like, all right, cool, I'll be your mock client. You pitch me. And I'll tell you what you did wrong. Do the pitch again next week.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's not that hard. It's just, you know, it's just like drawing. You could do 10,000 drawings with nobody looking at it and still suck. But if you did 500 of the right drawings with a, you know, master draftsman, they can get you up to speed a lot faster.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take much to just make those adjustments as long as you put in the work.
To the point about young directors too, I think if you look at maybe a production company or a director rep kind of company and they have a young director, I guess in that case, maybe if it's a director who hasn't really worked with clients that much, you probably have your EP or your producer there to also kind of help along the way.
You know what? I think I 1,000% agree. Cause I mean, that is to me, and you mentioned this a little bit to me, what is even a studio anymore? Because the software is all democratized. The hardware is getting cheaper and more accessible. You don't even have to have a great computer at home anymore. You could pay to VPN into an amazing set of machines, you know, for a nominal fee. So when you don't have those things, and most studios are really just like a quilt of like freelancers randomly put together under like one creative director. If a studio doesn't have that, like a really great EP with a great leadership for creativity, like there's not much that actually qualifies as a studio anymore, right? Like unless you own real estate.
Yeah.
You know, like what is the benefit of a studio really other than the people there that are staff and their reputation? There's not much left.
Right. And I actually have a few friends here in town that have studios and, you know, nobody's really at the studio yet. And I wonder if it's going to go back or not. And I feel like, honestly, for me, one of the best parts of having a studio is just to work and be around people you love every day. And sort of experience that. I think Jay from Giant Ant was talking recently and talking about how, you know, a lot of that magic comes from being in the same room with people. And I think I would miss that, you know. So if I was to start another studio, there would still be people that were probably full-time and local, but it probably would just be more stripped down.
Yeah. I mean, I do hope that that's what this all settles into, is that there's still that, you talked about it, you know, like whether it's like skating or it's being in a band or it's just being in art school around other people and having the luxury of having, you know, a place where everyone's kind of single-mindedly focused in that thing that they like. There's a different energy that comes from that. I hope studios somehow find a way to get back to the idea of being able to have the play. Like there's no app that lets you have the happy accident that just having five people in the same room gives you, right? Like there's no service that provides that. But at the same time, I hope we find a way to take that and bolt on this idea that there is a literally global, you know, set of artists that are capable to tap on the shoulder and integrate into your team as well. That I think that's going to be the next step forward. It's not just youth. It's not just cheaper labor. It's not just having 24-hour every time zone availability for work. It's also there are people with other interests, other backgrounds, other stories that you can bring into your jobs, can bring into your company culture. That I hope, you know, that's the, to me, like the like awesome opportunity about whatever version of motion design is going forward.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the best parts about, I think, where I am now too, is being able to work with all these artists from everywhere that I had only just kind of seen their portfolios or, you know, followed on Twitter, but actually getting to build a team and I can pick and choose these people that I'm fans of and work with them. It's awesome. The whole like new studio thing too, I kind of relate it a little bit to kind of what School of Motion versus traditional school is in a way. Like I think back to my time at school and I probably didn't put in what I should, but I think there were benefits of being at school. And again, that was meeting people and being around people physically and seeing what they're doing. I think that's actually pretty valuable.
Yeah.
And I know you guys do a good job of it with the online, you know, you have classes and teams and everybody can communicate and all that, but
still not the same. Still not exactly the same. I think that's the place in the whole kind of like rubric of like great content, you know, curated, you know, TAs teaching you. The community part, I think, is still something that I love our community, but there's always more ways to do it, right? There's always more ways to add those accidental interactions where you hear somebody listening to a song that you thought you're the only person who knew what that band was, or somebody's reading a comic or somebody's watching something or they're making something. You're like, how the hell did they do that? Like that is still like, that's the hardest thing to capture, is just the like the stuff you can't plan for, but it's guaranteed to happen if you have your eyes and ears open around a bunch of other people doing similar things. Like you can't, it's hard to replicate that energy and that those like opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, something about just being around people too kind of gives you a mental break. You know, right now I'm working in my basement and yeah. I don't see natural sunlight. And so all my conversations all day long are just on Slack for the most part. And I don't know, I can't do that for much longer. I need to get into a studio space where I see sunlight and maybe see people every once in a while.
I mean, that's literally with you in a position where your success is given by your ability to kind of come up with creative solutions. Like we've all literally been for 2 years, basically dulling half of our senses down, right? Like half of our, like literally just like feeling the wind on your skin, or taking a walk and meeting up with somebody for coffee and having a conversation about interests, or there's a forced limitation on your creativity when it's literally just screen-based and type-based interactions, I think.
Yeah.
And it's at some point you have to almost just like untangle from all of it and find a way to like refresh or like reset.
Yeah. Do you get out often? You're in Chicago, right?
I'm in Milwaukee now. Oh, okay. I was in Chicago, but I did recently go back out to LA, and I, not for anything work related, but I was able to connect with a couple of like groups of people outside, and it was, without even planning for it, it was like in Pulp Fiction when there's that moment where somebody gets the adrenaline shot and they like literally come back up like they're from the dead and like totally awake and aware. I literally felt like after 2 days of just like randomly running into people and, you know, one group talk with like 15 people, I literally felt like for the next 2 weeks, like I was just like on like another level. Like I felt like all of my like sensory receptors were different. I was having different ideas. I was just recharged, and I didn't do anything other than just like sit down or stand next to other creative people and listen and talk and ask questions. And it was very eye-opening to me. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is something that was so strong because it's been so long, or it's just like something that we regularly did but didn't realize. Like, you know, you work in a studio and you have an ongoing conversation for weeks with someone about something, and it finds a way and it's to work. And then you go to lunch and three other people say something that you didn't expect. And like I said, there's no app that can capture that, right? Like, there's no way you can prompt those things from happening. But
I know.
I was going to ask you, you know, you've had this great experience and this great career, and you're having this resurgence of finding your voice, and you know, your work is literally coming out as, you know, you. In the next 5 years, you know, like, what kind of stuff are you excited about? You know, in terms of like looking at the industry from your unique perspective, is it whether it's just personally or just tools or trends or for the industry in general? I always love hearing from people who have these unique kind of like parts of their career going on right now. Like what's exciting about you coming up down the road?
You know, personally, I'm looking forward to defining my style more and seeing if I even have a style. I'm not even sure if I really have a style. I like to kind of go in different directions visually, but I want to see if I can kind of hone that in. And then, you know, I'm really just excited to see kind of where the industry goes, and especially the younger kind of generation, just seeing what they do, you know, following all these people that I follow on Instagram and Twitter, like they're already blowing up. So I'm just excited to see 5 years from now where they're going to be. And kind of within that, like what is, you know, we don't know where the industry is going to go. I guess 5 years from now, it'll probably be fairly similar. But like you said, there's the whole meta VR stuff that's just on the cusp of, I think, going insane. So that will be interesting to see kind of what comes of that.
Yeah, no, I know. There's so many different ways it could go. There's so many new influences. I feel like there's a whole generation of people that have grown up with anime and manga that are finally going to get to the, and video games that are going to get to point, not just on our side of the equation, but also on the client side of the equation, that I think are radically going to change the way we talk about motion design within advertising, right? Like people's taste levels and sophistication on the client side, I think, are going to be much higher, and they're going to want to be patrons of this stuff, and they're going to want to see the things they love reflected in the work that they're doing, and they're going to be asking that of us. And I think that's super exciting, because I think it's going to create potentially more freedom and more expression, maybe return back to more cell animation or hybrids of, you know, 2D and 3D, and less of this just like trend-based, oh, this tool does this, so now the next 2 years of everything's going to have these three things in it. You know, like, I'm excited for that, because I feel like for a little while, motion design did become an echo chamber of After Effects plus C4D and whatever GPU rendering can give you, like whatever new feature is added, all of a sudden everything's going to have that. And I feel like that's gotten reflected in everything we do, whether it's title sequences or broadcast graphics or experiential. It's like, oh yeah, we got 3 months of bloom on everything, because now you can do it, you know, on your phone, you know, or, you know, whatever GPU rendered thing or Unreal can do it now.
Yeah.
I'm way more excited of being like, oh my gosh, Into the Spider-Verse came out. Now everybody's trying to figure out and pull apart the DNA of what made that special. And then Arcane comes out and there's this kind of like 60s era of music call and response pattern. That stuff I'm super excited about because that's what pushes things forward in terms of like artistic expression, not necessarily just the tools.
Yeah, I mean, stylistically, I'm always a huge fan of anything that sort of feels like it has some kind of handcrafted or analog approach to it. And I think where that really shines is when you can take that look, but then sort of mix it or map it on to maybe CG, you know, like I guess in my mind, I'm kind of thinking like I like to do 2D stuff over photos or 2D stuff over 3D. But at the same time, I can count at least five times I've pitched style frames that have this like oil, kind of oil painted sort of look. And either the project doesn't happen or there's not the budget to really like explore how to make it happen. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just excited to see what people are going to do crazy things. And like,
that's another thing I think where I am excited about tools is that that kind of look that you're talking about, like being able to create handcrafted styles for frames to pitch something. And then things like StyleGAN and EB Synth and, you know, machine learning, being able to create that stuff however you need to create it in terms of the structure that that stuff has to be pinned onto, but then being able to transfer, you know, like I'm looking at, you have some really dope boards that it looks like they're like ripped from Ponyo from like a Studio Ghibli film that it, I guess they didn't go anywhere, but they look awesome. And, you know, curse the client that didn't go with those. But, you know, like I see that and I'm like, oh man, that, and then like you take that frame and you do like a hand painted texture over the top of that and you make the fish in 3D and then you project it back on and you let machine learning, you know, express that over however many frames of 3D. Like that stuff is all like on the cusp of tools that are literally like freely available. It's not even like locked away in another tool suite, but like that stuff is something that like as creatives start getting more comfortable with that and playing with the technology in ways that isn't necessarily expected, or there isn't an instruction manual or a YouTube tutorial that says how you're supposed to use it. That's going back to, I think, what we start off with of like what to me, MoGraph and motion graphics and then motion design, that was the spirit of it back then, was like take your influences, abuse the tools to the point where they actually do what you need it to do to make something that you couldn't do out of the box any other way. I feel like we're right on the cusp of being able to do a lot more of that.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And you're kind of reminding me that I should probably brush up more on the tech side of things because, you know, I'm usually sort of focused in on just drawing a nice picture. But it's cool to hear that there's like technology where this stuff is going to be reality very soon.
Yeah, it's getting closer. And I think it's always going to be an eternal chase, right? It's always going to be like, oh, can I connect with a programmer who understands a little bit about art to get what I need out of those like open source tools? And then 2 years later, all of a sudden, there's just an AI routine inside of, you know, Adobe Sensei that just does it for you. Like it's always a chase. But when the chase is being driven by, you know, like an artistic vision, it's way more exciting than just like, here's what a bunch of stuff could do, figure it out.
So. Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I feel like we could probably go on for another hour as an after show to just talk about all of your work and stuff you're interested in, but we'll have to have you back on another time.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
But I really appreciate just like sharing your experiences. And I really think if you can, you have to check out aaronjray.com. And then also, if you've listened to this, I think it's just legworkstudio.com. That is the kind of the goodbye microsite version of, you know, Legwork's kind of history and lineage. It's definitely worth going in, just seeing the work that was done. And also as you start to explore, it kind of, I think it unlocks a really dope, like I think almost 2 minute long reel of all the work that Legwork did. Even though it says Leg didn't work, Legwork did work and it worked for a long time. And it's just a great kind of almost like time capsule and love letter to all the work that you and the team put together. It's definitely worth taking a look if you haven't heard of Legwork before this podcast.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks so much for having me on. Like I said, I love what you guys are doing and it actually keeps me excited about the industry and gives me ideas every day. So thank you.
Whew. That was a really good talk, wasn't it? You could tell how excited I was to find out where Aaron's at right now, because I feel like a lot of my path has been shared with him. We both started at close to the same time. We have a lot of similar interests, and we've kind of questioned where we are and what we're doing throughout our career in similar ways. Now, the thing that I love about Aaron is that he's pretty far into his career, yet he's starting to see even more and more of himself in his work, and his vision is starting to be expressed for his clients, for his reps, and for his own artistic expression. And that's something that I think is really rare in an industry as you start to move up that corporate ladder, as you start to move further in your career, maybe thinking about art directing or creative directing. A lot of times your work looks more like what your client needs it to look like versus what you've seen in your head the whole time you've been working. I think that's a really enviable place to be in, and something that is an amazing target for all of us, no matter where we are in our careers, to understand that it is totally possible to get to that place. Well, I hope you were inspired, and I hope you've taken some time to go and check out Aaron's work, whether it's at Legwork or at his Instagram or at his own site, because the mission here is always to inspire you, to introduce you, and keep you going every single day. When you wake up, you fire up that monitor and you fill the blank page. So until next time, peace.